Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to this special edition of Truth in Movies coming from the Venice Film Festival. So we're here at the 76th Venice Film Festival. It's our second day and we're going to be talking about some of the films we're seeing and giving you a little bit of colour on the experience of being on the ground at the Venice Film Festival. So let me introduce to you Christina Newland, who is a Little White Lies contributor and freelancer for various outlets across the globe. She's joining me today to discuss, I think we're going to talk about three titles that we've caught up with, all world premieres. Christina, can you tell us a bit about the film that we've just come out of?
Yeah, it was the Kristen Stewart biopic of Jean Seberg called Seberg. It was mediocre, I think. Very stylish, great to look at, kind of a nice supporting cast. Jack O'Connell is in it as a sort of sympathetic FBI agent who's listening in on Jean Seberg's calls and bugging her house in the late 60s when she got involved with the Black Panther Party, seeing her as a potential political subversive and the ways in which that really did ruin her life. So it's a really interesting and very tragic story, but ultimately I wasn't super thrilled about it.
It struck me as having a little bit of parallel with the whole phone tapping thing and how that kind of intrusion can actually ruin people's lives. And did you get that kind of sense of emotion and that kind of almost political contemporary side to the film?
A little bit, but I think I was thinking about the conversation a lot. The way that, you know, the main character, the FBI character played by Jack O'Connell, is like the sound guy. He's the expert on making sure that everything's bugged up correctly. And him kind of sitting there and like listening back repetitively to different parts, becoming quite obsessed with her life, her conversations. Yeah, that felt Coppola-like to me more than anything.
For me, I think it suffered a little bit from that kind of slightly prestige biopic treatment that it's given. Just to add some context, Jean Seberg was, I think it's fair to say, a massive star in the 60s. She broke through in a role with Jean-Paul Belmondo in Jean-Luc Godard's Breathless, and then she worked a lot in France where she became a kind of almost cult figure and tried to come back to work in the US to expand her portfolio, I guess. And then, you know, the sort of left liberal political freedom that you maybe would have had it been able to have in Europe at that time, especially post 1968, it just wasn't there in the US. And when she, almost as a sort of casual gesture, signs over a very large amount of money to the Black Panther Party, the FBI see that happening, and she's in their crosshairs, and you have Kristen Stewart in this lead role. Was Kristen Stewart a good choice for the lead here?
I think that she makes a very good effort, and I think she's very talented, but there is something slightly off, I think, about her. Not just her, actually, but in fact the way she's filmed as well feels quite male-gazy, which seems to be trying to make up for a certain lack of sultriness that she has. And I think Seberg was quite sultry, and I don't really get that from Kristen Stewart. I know that sounds quite harsh, but
I kind of agree. There is a lot of shots of her looking slightly anguished, wearing a very, very, very low-cut, see-through negligee. maybe that was how Seberg dressed in private, but the camera does linger on it for a very long time. So just to add it into the context of the festival, it's the first film we've seen, I believe, that is played out of competition. And I think generally as a rule, films that might receive a little bit harsher treatment from the press gallery are moved out of the main competition and into out-of-competition slots, just to sort of, it almost prepares you for the type of film you're going to see. Like, it's more mainstream, it's not vying for any big prize, so it's a different type of launch pad. Do you think that it was worth screening as an out-of-competition film?
Yeah, I mean, I think it had its merits. Certainly, I feel like her story is not widely known unless you're a listener to, like, You Must Remember This podcast, or you're really into Hollywood history. And the idea that she was really being punished by this right-wing moralistic force in the FBI at a time when there was so much backlash against youth culture and the counterculture and sexual revolution, so much of it seems to be wrapped up in that, like, they're seeing her as a slut, they're seeing her as somebody that's cheated on her husband, that's had a, you know, interracial relationship. And I think that some of the ideas around that were interesting to see. But the fact that it tries to kind of have its cake and eat it by doing that and then being really male gazy with her body is a bit of a weird trade-off, I think.
Let's whisk our minds back, if we are able to a whole 24 hours now of movies. So back to yesterday, so that would have been the first day of the festival that we had been here for. They really decided to kick things off in high style with two massive films. You have James Gray's Ad Astra, which is his kind of very opulent, slightly experimental sci-fi opus starring Brad Pitt. And you also have Noah Baumbach's Marriage Story, which is his very, very delicate but funny and tragic dissection of a marriage, but also a sort of study of the differences between Los Angeles and New York. Let's kick things off with Marriage Story. What were your thoughts?
I think it might have been one of my films of the year. I think it's kind of major from him. And Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson are incredible in it. The understanding of intimate relationships and this kind of tenderness between them, even in unexpected moments, even when things have become increasingly brutal in terms of their divorce, I think really kind of hits a nerve. And I think it's a really beautiful, sad, funny film.
That's funny you say that, because when we were speaking beforehand, and you, I think, had read about the subject matter, your anticipation was maybe a little bit less than the actual result of seeing the film. What was it that was making it not seem like that kind of tasty prospect for you?
A few things, I think. I've always liked Baumbach, but never unreservedly loved in a super passionate way. Partly because I worried that it would be, you know, 2 hours slog about miserable relationship. I should have known better with Baumbach, because he's always pretty light-fingered in his approach, and there's so much incidental humor that even at the saddest moments, there's a hopefulness, I think, to the film. But so partly it was him, partly it was the fact that it was about a marriage falling apart. Certainly not for the actors. The actors were one of the things that I was most looking forward to, and was happily kind of, I was not disappointed.
I mean, Adam Driver has now set a bit of a stall for himself as the kind of almost indie darling. He's just ticking off working with all these great modern auteurs and does great work with them most of the time, I would say, this not being an exception. I thought it was really interesting to see Scarlett Johansson in a film like this, because I've almost come to expect her now doing big Hollywood sci-fi movies like Ghost in the Shell or doing her MCU thing. How did you feel about seeing ScarJo back in a meaty, dramatic role?
It was nice to see her be a human, kind of come down to earth, you know, wash her face because she's been crying and her eyes are all puffy. And she's perfectly capable, so it's a shame that she hasn't really had any of those roles recently. If I had a complaint about the film, I guess I would say that in the latter half, the focus does shift slightly more to Adam Driver's perspective in the marriage. And I'd like to have got a little bit more from her point of view.
To sort of add some plot details. It's more of a setup, because it doesn't really have a plot in the traditional sense. There's this high-rolling New York couple. He's a theatre director. She is his kind of lead actress. And they have a young son, and it transpires that she has ambitions elsewhere and wants to work in TV and wants to direct herself. But he sees her as just part of his machine and his theatre company, And there's some animosity that has arisen from that. And it splits the family up. They're originally based in New York, the sort of American seat of theatre. And Scarlett Johansson's character then moves to L.A., takes their son with them, and then serves divorce papers from L.A. And then the film almost becomes a sort of a film about the law as well.
Yeah, there are two amazing supporting roles. Ray Liotta plays this shark of an aggressive divorce lawyer who, in his first meeting with Adam Driver as a prospective client, immediately calls Scarlett Johansson's character a bitch. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
And then I think probably even better is Laura Dern's role as an equally triumphant, successful divorce attorney for Scarlett Johansson's character. And she has this great monologue at one point where she talks about the double standards that are imposed on mothers versus fathers, that fathers are allowed to be imperfect, mothers aren't, they have to be perfect. It gives you a little bit of an insight into her character and maybe why she is a divorce lawyer.
She basically frames God as an absentee father and someone who we forgive for being imperfect, which is a nice line. I totally agree, they are really funny. And I would also like to give a shout. I mean, I think one thing that Baumbach does really well in general with his films is he kind of unearths these talents who have been making films in the 60s, 70s, 80s. He's a real kind of cinephile, and not just for the kind of canonical classics. He is someone who I think watches a lot of mainstream films as well, and like genre and action, and slightly kind of lower down the food chain movies. And seeing Ray Liotta in a Noah Baumbach film, you do have that slight cognitive dissonance, which is very pleasurable. But someone who he's also cast is the great comic actress Julie Haggerty, who is probably best known from her role in the film Airplane as the air stewardess. She is tremendous in quite a small role as a kind of pantsuit-wearing wine mom who is still very much, is very fond of Adam Driver's character, and it's kind of sad to see that his daughter is letting him go in this way. So I was really pleased to see her involved. Let's move on very quickly to, I guess, the sort of most glitzy and glamorous film at the festival so far. And it wasn't the opener. The opener was actually Hirokazu Koreeda's The Truth, which, alas, neither myself or Christina were here in time to see, but we will be watching at the Toronto Film Festival and covering it from there, so look out for that. But Ad Astra, Brad Pitt, Dad Pitt, Dad Astra. The film is set in the near future of a kind of considerable technological advance where the human race is now able to fairly easily travel the length and breadth of our known solar system, but at a time when alien life or intelligence beyond our solar system is still yet unknown. And Brad Pitt's father, played by Tommy Lee Jones, has taken a sort of science vessel situated by the rings of Neptune, taken it hostage, and is sending these shock waves back to Earth, which is causing disruptions and potentially the death of humankind. Brad Pitt then, as his son and almost a sort of Captain America, American superhero, lantern-jawed, steely-eyed, unemotional, his heart rate never raises above 80, even when he's like plummeting many miles to Earth from this kind of weird space antenna. He is sent on a mission to Mars to give his dad a ring and say, "Hey, Dad, why don't you stop jeopardizing the future of humankind?" And it's directed by James Gray, who's done The Lost City of Zed and The Immigrant and Two Lovers, and quite a divisive guy. And how did this fit into the James Gray catalogue for you?
Well, it wasn't exactly what you'd expect, considering his past two films have been period pieces. As I think you said to me earlier, it's not your typical silly Hollywood blockbuster. But it's definitely that thing of, you know, that this director is a cinephile and sort of deeply versed in all different genres of cinema, because you have this thoughtful sci-fi, which in some way seems to borrow from 2001 and canon philosophical science fiction. But on the other hand, you have moments in it that are almost borderline like splatter movie, like Event Horizon, more schlocky stuff, like really kind of intense, gnarly space deaths going on.
There's one sequence that is a very, I think, obscure reference to Planet of the Apes, which let's not talk about, but there is an overall sense in the film that he's collecting together these very subtle name checks to a lot of classic sci-fi films. As you say, 2001 and Solaris, the Tarkovsky film, would be another one.
I thought that his whole gambit about looking at the moon in the near future and, you know, assuming that capitalism will very much follow us into outer space as we colonize and build, of the moon becoming like Disney World, and there being tourist attractions, and there being all sorts of corporate fast food chains. That was a very canny decision on his part, and one of my favorite bits, I think.
And how did you find Brad Pitt? Because, I mean, he is on a bit of a roll this year. I mean, people are loving him on the back of his Cliff Booth in Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. How does this compare?
Oh, God, it's so different, but it just shows his range as an actor. And anybody that has maybe been sleeping on Brad Pitt for whatever reason shouldn't be anymore. But it definitely shows that he has the ability to be kind of a great deadpan comic actor as well as a proper leading man in an incredibly serious role. Like, it's very hard to even think of a joke in Ad Astra. Can you think of one?
I can't think of a joke, no. There are some little ironies in there, I think. Some of the references are a bit cheeky. But no, there was definitely no big laughs in the cinema, as there has been in many of the other films that we've seen. I'm not a massive James Gray fan. I mean, I haven't really liked any of his films. And even though he does have quite an avid following amongst cinephiles and film dudes and stuff like that. And I have to say, I kind of was coming to the film with sort of mild trepidation, thinking, oh, God, is this going to be another like thing that I love the idea of it and the prospect of it, but the reality is a kind of, it's just boring and indulgent. And, you know, fair play to James Gray. He has the ambition. He has this immense ambition, and he has this vision for everything he makes. It doesn't connect with me often, but this time it absolutely did. And I think it's a really moving and emotional and emotive film, helped by the score by Max Richter as well. Everything works in a really nice kind of visual, emotional union, I thought. And yeah, Brad Pitt's performance, where he is this kind of steely-eyed guy who just lets these tears roll occasionally, it really got to me. Do you think it's too much of a kind of guy film?
No, I mean, I'm here for Brad Pitt's manly tears, absolutely. And I think he's fantastic. I think part of my issue with it, and why I came out initially quite lukewarm, was that his voiceover, it had this issue for me of being quite profound and moving in one moment, and then in the next, slightly overstepping or having to overstate or be repetitive about some of the emotional truths that are going on inside him and the conflicts that are going on inside him as he goes to kind of try and, you know, talk to his father, who's, you know, estranged out in space somewhere. Having said that, I think it might be a bit of a grower, because the more I've thought about it, things about it, like the fact that there is this existential threat to humanity, and it seems like the least important part of the film in many ways, because you are so invested in his own personal journey and his relationship with his father. And I think it's very successful at doing that, and I liked that about it. So, yeah.
I totally agree. I think that, like, I think he knows that we've already seen many films where the threat towards humanity and the ticking clock, and we have to take a thing to a place and do a thing, and before the clock runs down. And he kind of almost sets the film up as that, and then it just becomes something very, very different. And instead of expanding, it narrows. It gets smaller and smaller and more intimate and more intimate. And the final scene, it's like you're almost nerve-wracking experience, because you're thinking, is he going to pull this off? Is he going to bring all these like weird eccentric strands together? And I just think he really does. But Christina, I'm going to sign off now, because we've been talking out on the grass, and I'm nervous we're going to get sunburned. So we're over 30 degrees here, so it's hot, and the mosquitoes are out. So thanks very much for having us, Christina, and we'll actually be joining you again later in the festival to talk about films like The Joker and the new Pablo Larraín film Emma. And what else are we looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to Baby Tooth. It's one of the, I think, two films in competition with the female director. Is that right?
Yeah.
So thanks for having us. As always, you can contact us at truthandmovies@tcolondon.com or at truthandmovies on Twitter. This has been a 7 Digital production.
Sometimes the transition to fall and winter feels like experiencing every season on the same day. The shoes in the Allbirds Mizzle collection were made for misty morning walks, surprise snow days, and anything a trip to the dog park might bring. The whole collection brings together water-repellent technology and classic style, so you can stay warm, dry, and comfy during your everyday adventures. Check off your errands with the Wool Runner Mizzle. Dash through cold and wet weather with the Wool Dasher Mizzle. or upgrade to next-level protection with the Wool Runner-Up Mizzle Plus. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase. ALLBIRDS.com, code FRESHSOCKS.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.